have, we are going to talk, Parshas Noach, we're going to talk about the Tzohar that was made for the Teva. So, Perek Vav, Pasuk Tes Zayin. In this Teva, the Noach is going to be on for the next year. Tzohar Tassel Tev. You should make a Tzohar. I'm not going to translate that yet because of the issues. Now, Amma Techlen Momalon, the way that the Teva is going to go is toward one Amma, it should end on top. It should just keep going up until it reaches one Amma up on top. Tassel Tev Vitzidach Rasim, and you should put a door. An Amma up right. It's going to go like this until it gets to one Amma, there will be one Amma wide up on top. And you're going to put a door of the teva on this side. You're going to make it with a bottom floor, a second floor, and a third floor altogether. Now, obviously, and we're not going to really go into this, but the Ramban says this whole thing was a miracle, because clearly there's no way that you would be able to fit all animals onto the teva, and there's no way that you'd be able to even, there's no way you can live this way. This cannot happen. There's no way these animals are going to survive. Anybody will tell you, you can have an animal in like, in, you know, a cage that like sort of can fit it in, you know, for a little bit, but to have it for a full year while you're rocking on the waves of a sea, there's no way these animals are going to survive this way. Most animals are too delicate for this to be able to happen. But either way, there were instructions made to Noah on how to do things, and clearly these instructions were not just how to make a boat. Because in fact, if I would tell you, here's how you make a boat. Make a box and let it go like that, and put it on the water. It's not going to work. That's not how boats float. It should be the opposite. It should go like this on the bottom, right, and go up to a box on top. That's the way it should be. But it wasn't that way. So there's messages that are being told to us regarding what this means to make a Tzohar and what the Tzohar represents and things like that. So Rashi says the following. The Tzohar is one of two things. Either it's a window or it's a precious stone that lit up the area for them. Now the Medrash says during the day the stone shone a little less, while at night it shone a little brighter. They would know when it was day or night. And that's based on Rabbi Yochanan, Sanhedrin, Kuf Chasam, and Aleph. But we have to understand two things. Number one, what is this machlokas? What are they arguing about? Whether there's a light in the teva or whether there's a window in the teva. And number two, what kind of stone is this? What stone gives off light that way that allows it to be able to shine throughout the entire teva? Yeah.
It would be torture for the animals and for the people to, like, it's called light deprivation. I mean, they do that.
They have to have something, clearly. Yeah.
I mean, the animals, they wouldn't know when to feed.
But that, you're 100% right. But what's the machlokas? I mean, why are we arguing about whether or not it's going to be a window or it's going to be a stone? What does that mean? Why is it there? Now, the word Tzohar.
Because it means whether or not, if there's a window, that means that the sun is coming out, or the sun is setting, and the moon is coming out, which would be a...
Tells you what you need.
Would be an argument.
Tells you what you need. But then why do you have the stone? Again, we have all the way through, why would you need one and not the other? What would that machlokas be based on? That's what we're really saying. In Lundis, what would you want as a machlokas as to why it could be one or the other?
You need a clock that's either telling
again,
you...
Again, but it's not a machlokas. What's the machlokas? That's what we're really asking. What kind of machlokas is this? So now, Tzohar appears as a word in Iyuv and Perek Gimel. And the word Tzohar over there means light. It's translated as light. Targum Unkelus over here as well says that it means light. Sisek Chamin says it comes from the word Saharayim, which everybody knows Saharayim is the afternoon. So it's the afternoon that we're referring to over here. Rav Hirsch says it's really from the word Zohar, as in to shine or to light something up. And instead of the Zion, there's a Tzadi, which is interchangeable. The Tzadi and the Zion in Hebrew can be interchangeable when referring to a word. Etymologically speaking, that can happen. And that's the reference over here. That's what it refers to. The Ibn Ezra says that this was a window. Because remember, the Ibn Ezra is in Pshat. And when you're dealing with Pshat, he says the Tzohar is not a stone. The Tzohar is a window. It's placed on top of the boat so light would be able to come through. It was an amma long, a sixth of an amma wide. So not that big. We're only talking a foot and a half, right, by almost a couple inches, 3 inches altogether, with an opening toward the side of it. So meaning it would have been like an opening, then there was a thing on top, hold on by like four little things, and then the air came in and the light came in from the sides while there was something on top so that the rain would fall off on the other side. It wouldn't come straight down. It wasn't like a teepee, like an Indian teepee, where you have everything heading up and then there's a hole on top, where if the rain fell down, the rain would come straight into the teepee. It wasn't like that. They had a covering that kept the rain out, and then everything went to the sides itself. That's what Ibn Ezra says. The Rosh is of Gematria. Tzohar, with the Vav, is Or Chalon, the light of a window, and that's that. The Ralbag, he's another region, says, they put there a Geshem Sfiri. Now, I always thought this, but I never wanted to say it. They put there a Geshem Sfiri. This is the Ralbag. A Geshem Sfiri is a glass cover. It was not wide open to the elements. They used a glass or whatever they had that was an equivalent of glass back then that was put on top of the boat that nothing would be able to get in, and they could still use it as a window. The Torah Tmima assumes this is obvious, that of course they covered it. What if the rain came in? And the Malvim says it as well, and he says the Medrash called it a Komrotin. I don't know what that means exactly, but he calls it a Komrotin, which means that it was covered It might have been a little bit more opaque. I can't imagine they had transparent glass by the times of Noah, but they had something that covered it that the rain wouldn't come in, but the light would be able to come. But all of them agree that it's referring to a window.
So it's like it's a piece of quartz or something like that?
Something like that. Something like that, or a diamond. Oh, something like that, right. Glass. That was able to go across in some way, because I don't think they have the ability to make glass. We'd have to
they stuck a rock in a hole.
No, I remember looking this up. The first official glasses that have been made that people used, in other words, they used to have like a little stick with a glass, with a big piece of glass on it, and they put it in front of their eyes in order to see, that was mentioned in the year 250. There are pictures in the BCEs of people with little glass monocles that they used to use in order to see things clearly, like the Monopoly Man, right? That was from over 2300, 2400 years ago. It seems that those existed even back then. I can't tell you for sure, because it definitely is a little bit weird, but regardless, the glass that we had, if we're dealing with Noah, that's 1656, that's almost 4,000 years ago, well, more than 4,000 years ago, there wouldn't have been glass in the world that we know of. You never know, it was before the Bible.
Like a bunch of stuff that, like...
Yeah, could be. I don't want to argue that point. Yeah, it's possible. Target Munison. I'm sorry?
Glass to be found in nature.
Yeah, a big piece of glass that you'd be able to fit into this area of the table would be hard. And maybe they did. Maybe they had an ability to cut. Again, if they had diamonds, then you could cut it. So it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but who knows. Targum Yonason says, Noah should go to the Nile River. He says he should go to the Nile River and take from there a precious stone to be used in the Teva as light. So Rashi's idea of the precious stone, that's where you get it from. You get it from the Nile River. Why there? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky points out in Parshas Bereishis, in last week's Parsha, the Nile River called the Pishon is where the gold of the world is, the Bedolach, which seems to be like onyx, and the Eben Hashoam is the onyx, and the Bedolach is some type of crystal. That those stones were in that area. It must be that there, in that area near the Nile River, I don't know if it means by the Nile Delta, where Egypt is, or the Nile Starts, which is in the mountains of Africa, if we're dealing with somewhere around there, there is a stone, some type of stone that is a property that includes being able to give off light. The Balat Turim says Sohar without above is Laor HaEven in Gematria 295. He also says that it's a margalit. He calls it a pearl. A pearl, because the Gematria of Sohar Ta'aseha is 695, which is Zem Margolius, but he says that. Now, I don't know. Margolius is a pearl. No pearls give off any light. The Rabbeinu Bachai in Shmos Chavches Tesvav says it's a berekes, which is a crystal, a carbuncle, or a diamond of some sort. I'm just going to tell you to be careful. Do not look up the word carbuncle, okay? Because carbuncle apparently is a bad disease, a skin disease that gets on your skin. It is the most disgusting, pus-filled, vomit-inducing thing that you have ever seen before in your life. So carbuncle, yeah, and that's great, guys. But that's that. But it is some type. There is another type of carbuncle that's called a stone, and it's one of those that they use. But again, all of those are issues. Anybody who's seen a diamond before, I told you. Anybody who's seen a diamond before knows it doesn't give off its own light. It reflects light beautifully. A carbuncle and any of these things would reflect light, but they actually give off light we don't see. The Rashmi Bell says, why would you think it's anything but a window? Why are we being so dochik to think that it soars a huge stone that gave off light? Why would you think that way? He says through a Gemara in Bava Kama, Samachum Abeis, where we learn from Yeshaya, in a time of pain and anger, when Hashem is angry at the world, one should hide in a closed up house. You should pent yourself in and not go out. Noah was a tzaddik who could have survived, and he himself could have walked outside. Such a tzaddik wouldn't have a problem, but his family wouldn't have survived. And if so, the table was required for them, and they wouldn't be able to look outside. They would be closed up. They would have to stay in. They wouldn't be able to go anywhere. Maybe that's the pshat of what it means, that there wasn't a window because they couldn't have a window. They couldn't look out. There had to be a stone inside. Dave, what's up?
There's no window. How did he let the stuff out?
There was definitely a door. Pastach ha-teva b'tzidato seems. There definitely was a door, but nothing that was open. But that is the question. It's a good question of itself. The Balei Tosfos say that this will happen in Yerushalayim in the future. There will be no need for a sun because the stones, the diamonds that we're going to have is going to reflect so much light in Yerushalayim. It'll be so filled with precious gems, there will be no need for anything else. They'll give us all of our light, everything that we need. That's how the Balei Tosfos put it. Now, there's a bunch of issues.
If it's reflecting, it has to reflect somewhere.
And that's part of our problem. Give us a second over here. I haven't gone into that issue yet, but you're right. Now, there are a few issues with each answer, okay? First answer. If you're going to say, everybody agrees that there was a wind, there was something on the table that opened. The Pesach HaTeva B'tzidat Tzitzim. It's interesting because later on when he does send out the dove and the raven, he sends it out from a chalon. It says the word chalon in the Chumash. So that could be the Pesach, but that might as well be the Tzohar. But then the question is, if it is a window, then why not call it a window, a chalon? Why are you calling it Tzohar if it's clearly meant to be something else? So, but even if you get around that issue, the Radak says that if you say it was a precious stone, it's difficult to understand what it means, ta'asel. What does it mean, make a stone? You can't make a stone. You would make a window, but you wouldn't make a stone. But the answer to that question could also be obvious. Make settings in the table where you can put the stone. Maybe you should do it like that. I thought that was an obvious answer to be able to go through.
Cutting the stone.
Yeah, like cutting the stone to be able to fit. On the other hand, if you say it was a window, right, one question you might have is, why not call it straight out to be a chalon itself, right? And also, how in the world is one window going to give light to three floors? Now, I want you to remember, this table was huge. It was 300 amos. That's at the very least, let's get the Chazon Ish, not take the Chazon Ish for right now, 450 feet long. That is a half of a city block. Half of a city block. That's how long the table was. 50 amos wide is 75 feet. 75 feet is an extremely large, and you're dealing with 45 feet tall. You're talking about a four-foot building that is that high, huge, four-floor building that is absolutely huge. One window is going to bring light to the entire Teva? That's ridiculous. There is no way that such a thing could happen. No way. So in other words, if there was a window, if we're dealing with a window, then clearly there's got to be more. The Torah to me even suggests it's not one window, it's many windows throughout the Teva. And if we're dealing with glass covers, as we said before, then it would make sense. There were windows throughout the Teva, the way we have on boats, you know, those little holes on the side, right? That's what it was on the Teva itself. What's going on, Isaac?
But in terms of telling night or day, it doesn't matter if it lights off the whole thing. It just matters if you can tell.
Somewhat, yeah, but how do you do that with just one little window? And plus, I think it's more than that. And really, David said it before. You need light. You need to function. How are they able to function without light in the table? How is Noah able to feed all the animals for a year in the table? Yeah.
Giant storm going for about a year. Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's not. Remember, no. The giant storm is only 40 days and 40 nights. And I know that's a lot, but 40 days and 40 nights. 150 days, the water was climbing and going everywhere, whatever it was. The water was just, you know, all over the place. And then it started to recede. It really was only 40 days of rain. 40 days of absolute rain.
Though, the water was over the whole world, and that starts evaporating and going up, then that cloud is covering the whole sky.
You have a big cloud covering. There's a famous kliyukr about what you're saying. That's why the first rainbow appeared. But regardless, there is problems with this, but you can get around this in a certain way. What?
I don't know if someone's a meteorologist. He's a weatherman.
That's a good one. So now, there's other potential issues that might be able to go through. You just said there's a thick cloud cover. And were the sun and moon able to get through that? The Medrash Rabbah says they weren't able to. So even if you had a window, you had no ability to see because there was no sun and moon shining through. There was nothing there to be able to see through. So what would be the point of having the window if there was no light to be able to get through? The Rabbeinu Ephraim says it's got to be that the sun and the moon and the stars actually were working, right? But it only works on top of the table, and the rest of the world was filled with clouds. Everywhere else in the world there were clouds, but right on top of the table there was a special spot. It's like that guy who's like walking the street and it's raining everywhere but by him, right? That awesome guy who's like walking around. That's what it really was like when it came to stuff like that. I was one time in Amish town in the middle of Pennsylvania, and while we were there, you saw the rain coming. First of all, it was awesome because all the Amish were like, oh, rain's a coming. And I'm like, yeah. It was great, but they all knew the rain was coming. It was so awesome because I'm sitting in one thing. It was dry. There was nothing on my side, but it was pouring on the other side of the Amish country. And then it started pouring by us, and it was fine over there. But it was crazy how you could see like one rain cover come in one area. That's what it was like by Noach. That Noach himself was able to see through and have something on top. That's that. The Nachlas Yaakov says that it could be, this is exactly the machlokas between the two, whether it was a window or whether it was a stone. If the sun, moon, and stars worked properly, then there was a window. And if they didn't work properly, well, then you didn't need a window. You had to have a stone. You had a precious stone there. It could be there's another machlokas. The Eid of the Osef and the Torah to me both say, there's a famous machlokas. Lot's wife Her name was Iris. That or Edith. One of the two. Iris or Edith. I don't know how to read the the Medrash might be mistaken if it's a Resh or a Dalet. But Edith or Iris was the name of Lot's wife. She turned back and turned into a pillar of salt because if you're not deserving of being out of them, of destruction, and you look back at other people being destroyed, you get killed. You're turned into something like them. You get punished the same way they did. The Machlokes between them could be this. If it's a window, then Noah was a tzaddik and he was allowed to look outside of the teva as the people were being destroyed. If it's not a window, it's a stone, it's because Noah was not really a tzaddik and didn't deserve to look outside the window. And therefore, it was only a stone. So the Machlokes was how big of a tzaddik was Noah. Yeah.
If it is a cholon, it's such a small area, it's on the top. So you're not, if you even look out, you're not seeing.
That's correct. I didn't want to ask on that. Let's go with, if it's a Torah Tumimah, you can go with the Torah Tumimah's answer before, that there were windows throughout the table. No, that's what you'd have to say. But yeah.
Noah's family.
I'm sorry?
Noah or Noah's family?
Noah and his family. Me and his family. So that's the question.
His tzaddikness is in dispute.
So to speak. The very second Rashi in this Parsha. Noah is tzaddik. Tell me how you bedoros of. In his doros, he was a tzaddik. But if he wouldn't be in another generation, he wouldn't be a tzaddik. Or, in his generation with tzaddik, Kol Shekin, he would have been if he would have been in another generation. That famous Rashi. Right? Yeah. That was the Machlokas. He is a person, yeah. What's up, Dave?
Two questions. One, why can't you say that there was a window?
Yeah.
There wasn't a window. He's a tzaddik, but the rest of his family wasn't.
Yeah, that's another way of looking at it. They didn't say that, but you're right, you're saying correct. I mean, that's another way of looking at it. Now, the Chizkuni says it's obvious it was both. There was a window, there was a stone for light. There was both of them over here. There's no problem with it whatsoever. Now, to me, it makes a lot of sense. If you have a light that comes through the top, and then you have stones strategically placed throughout the teva that would be able to reflect the light properly, you will then have light going throughout the entire table. You don't need windows everywhere. To me, this seems to be the most obvious answer. You have the window on top that everyone agrees was used to send out the dove and the raven, right? And then afterward, you put stones all over in different places to make sure that everybody was able to see on all three floors. And it was perfectly reflected light. You'd have to have it in a certain way, and that's the tzaddik. You have to make it in such a way, maybe even mirrors. Yeah, why not? Why not? You can do whatever you wanted with this. Therefore, the Chizkuni says 100%. It could be done. It would maximize the effect of every stone, and that way it's there. And that also answers our other question. The other question was, what kind of a stone gives off its own light? What kind of a stone gives off that light? So I checked it out. Here's the deal. There are no known gemstones that exist in this world that give off their own light. Some gemstones give off light, so to speak, but they're at wavelengths that the human eye cannot pick up. So we can't see it. It would be sort of like a black light to us. It wouldn't be anything to us, although it's technically a light, right? You'd have to use UV rays or UV lights or filters to see the fluorescence of those types of lights over here. There are around 4,000 different types of minerals, and about 15% of them have this thing called fluoresce, which allows them to shine in some way, shape, or form on their own, but not something the human eye can see. It's always an impurity that causes that fluoresce. In other words, because there's something wrong with it, that allows it to shine. For example, you've seen fool's gold before, right? Fool's gold, the only reason why it shines is because of the impurities in it. Regular gold does not shine unless you get rid of everything and you make it in a certain way. You get down to the carat of, as great as you can. They don't normally shine. It's the impurities that make it shine. And fool's gold is filled with impurities that allow it to look like it's shining. And that's why it's called fool's gold and stuff like that. So activators include chromium, iron, titanium, copper, lead, sulfur, nitrogen. There's all organic types of things and stuff like that. But again, even then, you're not going to see much with it, which means there is no stone that we have that's like it. I tried looking up by the Nile River, anywhere near, all the way by the Egyptian Delta, there's nothing. Nothing that we know of any stones that were around there that give off their own light. And then I tried looking in the middle of the mountains, is there anything like it? The most you can get are diamonds, which obviously we all know in Africa, diamonds are plentiful, right? There are diamonds that are all over the place, but diamonds don't give off their own light. At least the diamonds that we have today, none of them give off their own light, although there are some diamonds that can make a room extremely bright by having just one diamond there. It can bring the light to all different directions. Jake, what were you going to say?
Aren't there radioactive
radioactive material is almost always due to something else that you do to it. It's never, like, if you find uranium in the ground, it's not going to be like Homer Simpson in The Simpsons where it's a light green, you know, little thing, and you're like, ooh, uranium, that's not what it is. Uranium is a regular mineral, but no, it doesn't on its own. It doesn't normally do that on its own. Now, I came up with something which I think could possibly be, could be an idea to be able to at least get around. There's something called bioluminescence. Bioluminescence is used by animals in many, many different places, but especially water. The easiest way, bioluminescence is used by a firefly. And I know you all live in Chicago, and Chicago no longer has fireflies because we got rid of all those mosquitoes, and we spray every year to get rid of mosquitoes, which also kills the fireflies. So you barely ever see fireflies in Chicago. But in any other city in the entire world, you will see fireflies. Fireflies have the same thing. For whatever reason, whether it's to attract mates or to communicate or whatever it is that they do exactly, they're just having fun, right? They have the ability to glow. Glow worms. If you've ever seen, there's a National Geographic, Nature, BBC has it. The BBC Nature series. I forgot what it is. Whatever it is. Something like obvious, like Nature or something like that. Nature World or whatever it is. They have something on glow worms. It's the craziest thing where you go into a cave and there's string lights hanging from the top because all these glow worms, right, are all sitting there and they catch bugs by just making these huge things glow, and the whole cave is lit up from these glow worms. It's the craziest thing you've seen. Those are the only two animals on the earth that produce bioluminescence that are on earth. In the sea, you have this all over the place. And you all know it from Finding Nemo, so you don't need to go any further than that. Just go into Finding Nemo and you have those little guys.
I've been in
the ego
kayaking.
Oh, the best. So, if you look on your sheet, it's not great pictures over here. Over here, there's a jellyfish, especially a bioluminescence, where they can see them even in pitch black areas. Jellyfish have it. There are other areas. That's a whole group of jellyfish over there, which you can't really see so well. If you look on top at the picture that you can't see, there is bioluminescence in the water, where people literally go into the water. It's blue all around them. It's just glowing everywhere around them, right? It's regular water, but the amount of bacteria and everything else, the stuff that's in there, that's what fills up everything. So the only thing that I'm thinking is like this, and the way that I said it, I think it's just like this. Bioluminescence, the way that it works is somehow it's an emission of light by a living organism. If there was some way for Noah to find a creature, especially in the sea or something like that, that was filled, that could fill up with light or bring light to something else, it's possible he was able to use that on the Teva itself. He had glowworms in every room. I mean, why not have glowworms in every room? Or just have fireflies flying everywhere? That would be everywhere, all over the place. Stop that, I'm sorry. The bugs, by the way, did not have to be by two. Bugs did not have to be by two. Well, one of the things out there, yeah. And normally, these lights are blue and green, but there are some that are yellow, there are some that are red, right? There are other things out there. So Targum Yonasan said that Noah got what he needed from the Nile River. Could it be that he got a stone in the Nile River that was filled with this bioluminescence from creatures that lived on it, and he used that stone? It wasn't a precious gem, as we call it, or if it was, it was a gem in the Nile River that was being lit up and maybe even putting it out through the bioluminescence of an animal, of a fish that was in the Nile River that gave forth this type of thing. I don't know, but maybe that's an answer to the question. If there was a huge diamond in the Nile River that a ton of, I don't know, jellyfish went around, and that there's already light on it, and the diamond was able to exude that light into other places, that could be an answer as to what they used on the Teva itself.
Are there any freshwater marine creatures?
No, but the Nile River is so close, especially by the delta to the Mediterranean Sea, there's no question that there are times where the jellyfish will be able to go into the Nile River. They won't live for long, but it could be, again, yeah, brackish water, you'd be able to find it. The concept is there. I'm sorry? Yeah, you could have stuff like that. Yeah, you'd have to see if the refraction is good enough. But at least it's an idea. It's not something, I will tell you, I did not see this anywhere. I'm telling you, whether or not this is actually a true idea, I can't tell you. But it sounds like it could work. I think that could be there. Now you have the Kiskuni. The Kiskuni says a third answer that's not like Rashi at all. He says, Sohar is from the Lashon of Yitzor. Anybody know what the word Yitzor is? Dagon, Tirosh, the Yitzor.
Right?
Dagon is grain, Tirosh is wine, Yitzor is? That's okay. Don't worry. There's only one person here.
Farming?
No. That would be part of grain. What? Oil. Very good. Yitzhar is oil. Says the Hizkuni of Chiddush beyond the Chiddush that Zohar was an oil lamp. There were oil lamps throughout the Teva. He was told to get a barrel of oil and bring in. The Radak seems to say it as well. Tosfos HaShalom doesn't like it. Tosfos knocks it out. He says it's dochik, right? Maybe they brought in oil to cook their food, maybe to use, whatever, but he says, I doubt it's that. Regardless, it seems they have that.
Oil at that point?
I'm sure they had the concept of a fire. I'm sure they figured it out at some point. Yeah. I can't tell you for sure, but that's the Hizkuni. Yeah, it does make the most sense. It does make the most sense over here. Now, there must be a purpose behind all this. Obviously, the Kodesh Baruch Hu could have done everything. So what is Rav Hirsch trying to say over here? Rav Hirsch said this is only done, this whole thing was done to give Noah a command that he would follow, and through that, get a mitzvah to deserve to live the next year over the table. That if he did everything correctly. Now, remember, again, I know it's 120 years. I can't even imagine what it's like working on something for 120 years. But this is a huge boat, and he doesn't have anyone to help him. His sons were only born 20 years after he was given the command to make the boat. You'd assume that they grew up a little bit, and at the age of 10, they started helping daddy make the big boat. He spent 30 years cutting down trees, making wood, getting wood, enough wood to be able to make this thing, and then built a 450 foot long boat. This is not normal. That's not something where it's like, yeah, I could do that in a year. No, you cannot. You wouldn't do it in a billion years. There's no way. Maybe Troutman, possibly, but there's no way that any normal person would possibly be able to make a boat in that way. It's just not possible. Says Rav Hirsch, it teaches you that what we're trying to do is a person's actions have value, he says, when God tells him to do it. It doesn't matter what you think. Well, I think this is this is something that I should be doing because this is what I think is important. That doesn't matter. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants you to do something, that's important. If a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't tell you to do something, that's not important. And that's the main lesson, says Rav Hirsch, that we're learning about from right over here. Our concept and the idea that we're learning from this is that try to do what I'm telling you to do as opposed to what you think is a good idea to do. Now, let's go into the more Hasidic sector of what this Zohar means and what it represents.
There's the job that we're learning?
Yes, everything. So either way, our plan now is going to try to take up something from the Torah that we can learn from. The Chassam Sofer says, our body is the boat. The Teva is our body. The Tzohar is to bring Kedusha into our lives, to open up our heads, to allow the Kedusha from above to come back down and affect us, to give us a little bit of extra light. The only way to do that properly, the only way to do that in the proper way, is by sitting and learning Torah, and that's the Amma, Tichalenim Amalek. Chalem is the word of kalais, to desire something tremendously, to want to bring yourself up. And that idea is the Amma. The Bar Tzinur says Amma refers to Torah in the third parak of Avos. And that idea is that by learning, you have the ability to pull down that light, that Zohar will come down for you. You'll be able to be a Teva for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the concept. The Me'ashi Loach calls it, the Teva is more. The Me'ashi Loach calls it clarity. Clarity, the ability to think clearly. That is the biggest bracha of all time. Most of the time when we make mistakes is because we're not able to think clearly because there's something else going on. We're bothered by something. There's something in our lives that are bothering us or that are doing something to us. Clarity is something that's so important, that Zohar represents clearly seeing through the window of your teva, being able to see what you're doing when you're lost at sea is a metaphor for getting lost in life and doing things during life itself. That's the idea of the Me'ashi Loach. Two great lessons that you can learn from the Zohar, what the Zohar means in the table. Rabbi Yonis and Eifshitz and the Kliyakar both say the hint behind the boat having three floors, and this gets a little bit deep, and I can't tell you I fully understand what that means, but there's a world of Berea, Yetzira, and Asiya. Those are three worlds out there. The top world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called Atzilus. And the idea is that the three floors of the Teva represent all the world, Berea, Yetzira, and Asiya, and everything in it, while the Zohar, which you can only see through, but you have no idea what's going on up there, represents the idea of what this Atzilus world is. This world that's beyond where we are anyway. Anything that we're doing. That's the window. You see, but you can't go any further. It's referring to our intellect, our understanding in life, something that we can get out of. Then comes the Noam Elimelech. I will tell you. Rav Elimelech Milizhensk. So when my wife was pregnant with our first kid, with Devorah, we were in the what is that hospital right by Bayit Began? Shari Tzedek. I mean, Shari Tzedek in Eretz Yisrael. And in every hospital room, every room where there's a baby, where a baby could be born, they have the Sefer Noam Elimelech. Apparently, the Noam Elimelech is a skula for easy childbirth. And I remember sitting there and saying, oh, wow, Noam Elimelech, I want to learn the Noam Elimelech. And I sat down there, and me as my 21-year-old self, or maybe 22, I don't remember how old I was at the time, right? My wife was just sitting there waiting, you know, for contractions to go a little bit smaller, and I picked up the Noam Elimelech. I did not understand one word. Not one word. Even the word Vayomer. I had absolutely no idea what any of the Sefer was saying. No, absolutely nothing. Now I understand three words out of the entire Sefer. Three total. So this one I somewhat have, but I can't tell you I fully get it. He says Teva means exactly that. What does Teva mean in Hebrew? It doesn't mean boat. What is a Teva in Hebrew? A word. Period. A word. Every word that comes out of your mouth should shine like a great light. That's the lesson of the Tzohar. Tzohar Tasa L'Teva. Make sure that your Tevos, the words that you say, are filled with light and greatness and all of the good things that could possibly come out of it. Make sure that you're not saying anything that's Tameh. That's the concept of what the Tzohar is for the Teva. But the Noam Elimelech says another answer. It says, a tzaddik has the ability to turn something bad into something good. We've all heard of Nachum Ish Gamzu, right? Everybody knows Nachum Ish Gamzu. His concept is that what? That he always said?
Gamzu
Latova. Rabbi Akiva was his Talmud. Rabbi Akiva learned by Nachum Ish Gamzu. See, everybody knows that Rabbi Akiva learned for 24 years, right? The 12 years and 12 years. Did you know that before he learned for 12 years and 12 years, he had an Aleph Beis Rebbe that he learned by for 22 years? Then he went for the 12 years and the 12 years. See, it's a great story when you tell your kids. He went one day and he left his house for 24 years and he didn't see his wife again. But that's kind of sick. Because would you leave your wife for 24 years, right, without anything, after she just ditched her entire family in order to be with you? Is that, I'm just asking. I know Adam would, but would anybody else, would somebody else do that? That's not shayach. Why would a person do that? Shayach is he learned by Nachum Ish Gamzu for a while before he went off to Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Yeshua and learned for that time. He had kids during that time. Shulamis, who eventually married Ben Azai, was born during that time. Shimon was born during that time. Rishu ben Korcha had already been born. But regardless, they had those. They understood that sometimes when bad things happen, you have to find it into good. Says the Noam Elimelech, within every teva, word of tefillah and word of Torah, you can turn a tzara. Tzara isn't something that's filled with pain. You can turn that into a tzohar. If you know how to use a teva correctly, if you know how to learn what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for you and try to concentrate on what God is doing for you, you can turn tzoros into a tzohar. That's the concept. Take the Sadi Reshe, turn it around into an actual tzohar. That means you can turn an evil decree into something that is actually good. And that's our job in life. Our job in life is to see the things that are painful and see something that can become great out of them. I know, it's a little early, and I realize that it just happened last night, but you wouldn't appreciate that game as much now if what happened in the bottom of the eighth inning didn't happen. If you didn't have those runs scored and a tie game, if the Cubs would have won by 6-3 and would have been bottom of the ninth, you would have been happy. Everybody would have been like, yay, they finally won it. But you had to have that pain. The pain had to be there. You had to feel that pain once again of, oh my gosh, they're going to blow it again. You have to go through it. You have to go through a managerial decision that was probably the dumbest that anyone has ever seen, and somehow it worked out, as I said, because I was learning at the time, and therefore that's the only reason why it happened. I agree. That is 100% what happened. But regardless, you had to go through it, and now once you saw all of it and did, now you're like, now it's like the perfect storybook ending. Now it's like you went into extra innings of Game 7 of the World Series. If they would have swept, you'd be like, yay. Now it's like, I can't get over this. I'm just going to be a Cubs fan forever. Even if you're a hated, despised Cardinals fan. How could you not love these Cubs forever and ever and ever? And that's the way it is. That's the concept of the Noam Elimelech. The Degel Machna Fine quotes this from the Baal Shem Tov. The Sfas Emes says a lot about this as well. The concept of changing letters around. Maybe you've heard of the concept of Tsirufi Osios. The idea of putting letters together and coming out with something great. That's this concept. It's the idea of making Kedusha out of nothing. The Tzvar Shlomo, the Radomsker, says that's how it all said he can do. He says it a little bit differently. They turn the word nega into oneg. They turn a nega, a plague, into a pleasure, something that's good for them. What you're supposed to do is turn a tzara into ritzei. Ratza, something that God wants, a true, pure desire of Hashem for us. Noach tried so hard to turn Sarah into Ratza, but he couldn't. His efforts weren't for nothing. I mean, he was a Rebbe. He tried to teach people for 120 years, and he had one student, and it was Og. Not the best of students. But that's what he did. He turned Sarah not into Ratza. He couldn't turn it into Ratza. He turned it into Sohar. That's what he was able to do. He wasn't able to get all the way. It wasn't good enough. The Igret Akala, this is the Bnei Yisrael, the Rebbe of Avdinov, unbelievable thing. He says by the Mabul, Midas Adin was so powerful, because the people had to die. Midas Adin was so powerful. Elohim was fully involved to punish them, he says. The name of Elohim, Aleph Lamed Hey Yud Mem. That's how bad the scale of judgment was on them. And not only was it judgment, pure judgment, it was the full scale of unbelievable judgment of Hashem. That's what the Mabul is. The full scale. That means Aleph full, Aleph Lamed Pei. Lamed full, Lamed Mem Dalid. Hey full, Hey Hey. Yud, Yud Vav Dalid. Mem is Mem Mem. The full scale of every letter spelled out of Elohim. That's what was brought out to them over here. And the Pshat is, Rega, that's the Gematria of 295. Aleph, Lamed, Hey, Yud, Mem. With those letters fully spelled out, is the Gematria of 295. 295 is Sohar, says the Radomsker, this Tevar Shlomo, that all of this is into, that what happened over here is that, the Igret Akala, I'm sorry, is that they were trying to bring out Midas Adin, Midas Elohim, and that's what the Tzara was, that he was trying to turn into something good, and it wasn't going the way that Noah wanted to. That was the concept. Yeah, I guess you, what were you going to say?
Oak sat on top of the table.
On the side.
On the side, whatever. So, why, you said before that if, like, you're not Zohar to not be destroyed, you can't live to destruction.
Yeah.
So, if Noah's family and Noah.
Let me ask you something. You're already asking something good. Okay. Why, when Noah sent out the raven and the dove, right? Why not just ask Oak?
Okay.
Oak, look outside. Right? Why not just ask that? Okay. Why wouldn't you have done it? It's a good question, right? So I only have 6 answers to the question. Only. But it was a question that I asked. I remember asking this. I remember sitting at a Shalom Zohar. Can't tell you who Shalom Zohar it was, but I was sitting down at a Shalom Zohar, and there was a big rub there, a guy who knew Chumash, Mamish cold, better than I'll ever know. And I sat down there, and I said, it was Parshas Noach, and he started darshaning about Parshas Noach. So I said to him, he was darshaning about Og, and he said, like, did you know that this, Og, that, or whatever it is? And I said, why did Noach need to ask the raven and the dove? If Og was right there, he'd be able to say to Og, just turn around and say, hey, is there land? He'd be like, yep. They're like, great. Okay, we're done. So he said, what, that's a question? So I was like, oh, no, you didn't. So the rest of that whole Shalom Zohar was a fight between me and him. And I am not proud about what I did, but I did try to destroy. And when I try to destroy, usually I'm able to destroy. I can be a shade when I like, David knows very, very well. I can be a shade if I want to. That was not the greatest of Shalom Zohars. I still remember. Not yet. You don't know. No, you have no idea. Not yet. But that was, I destroyed. I was very, very upset. He tried saying, like, you didn't even know that Eliezer was Oak. I said, oh, really? So, do you mean Nesach Tesol from Perakov Beis? Or do you mean from the Yalkut Shemoni Parshas Chayezara? Or did you mean from? I kept going. I when I want to really destroy, sometimes you know you can make up a medrash or two and they won't even know. Like the medrash of Avtir and Parshas Noach. Really? No, but if I really, really, whatever it is, I was extremely, extremely angry. What? Oh, so anyway, I found 6 answers. So anyway, at the end, I found 5 answers to the question and I won.
About what he said.
It was the way that he said it. It really wasn't about the words. It was just more like he said it.
You still like your face.
Yeah, come on. That's the way it is, you know? Come on. It's pretty much when he took the soup and like threw it in my face, right? That was more like, all right, now this is going down. This is what's happening right now. Regardless, and now I completely lost my train of thought. Your answer with Og, one of the answers is exactly that. Og was not allowed to see the destruction. The entire time, he had to put his head to the teva and not look. He could not look the entire time. So that was the biggest challenge of Og, and had he looked, he immediately would have died, turned into a pillar of salt, or whatever it is would have happened to him. That's one answer. Another answer is he ran away. And remember, Og was a giant. If he was a giant, he was able to get away and find land before Noah would be able to find land, who wasn't as big of a giant as Og was. There's a couple others. Regardless, there's a Trisker over here. I don't want to go into it. The Avnei Ezel says there's only one way to escape the Mabul, the evil that's there, and really that's the outside world and whatever it is, and it's keeping Shabbos, going through Shabbos. He says Shabbos is like a boat in the middle of the sea where it's at rest. It lets you refresh yourself. It lets yourself get into your world of Kedusha, getting you ready for the next part of the week, for the next part, say for the next week, for the week that's coming up. That's the concept of Shabbos. Without it, a person will just be drowned in everything that's going on. He doesn't have the ability to reset himself, that idea. Hold on one second, Jake. So the concept is a Tzohar, which is a Gematria of 295, together with a Teva, Gematria of 407 without the Yud, is the Gematria of Shabbos. 702. Says the Avnei Ezel, and the Belzer Rebbe says it as well. A tzaddik can allow the Shabbos, that the Kedusha that comes through Shabbos, to be released throughout the entire world. And that's the concept of the Tzohar in the Teva. That there has to be a time for you to rest, to keep Shabbos in the proper fashion, for it to be done in the right way. And the Malbim finishes off like this. That really this light did not emanate from the stone. The light emanated from within. That Noah was filled with Kedusha. Noah himself had a light within him. The Beis HaMikdash had windows that were turned inward. Back in the day, what they used to do, right, in order to get more, you know, their light to go better, is that the windows were made in narrow on the outside and got bigger as it came inside. Right? That way, the light would shine forth in more areas. Maybe you've seen it by like when people have lights in their in the rooftops, right? Just little skylights and things like that. What it goes is you usually have some type of light, and then you spread it. You spread it in some way. By many lights they have it, not here, of course, right? But if you have like these light fixtures where you have something, and then you spread them so that the light goes as many places as possible. That concept, says the Malbim, is really true by the Beis HaMikdash, and it applied by the Tzidikim as well. Noach was the light. Noach's light was reflected by the window, or by the stone, or by whatever it was. That's the idea. The Teva represents how man would from then on make their light known throughout the entire world. It's represented by a Tzohar, but it is not that the Tzohar gave them the light. The Tzohar only represents the light that the people had themselves, that they had that Kedusha, that Das and Amuna that they were able to do. That's the concept here. So what do? We went through Rashi. Oh yeah, Jake, what were we going to say?
So just a quick question, kind of related to what you're saying. Do Noah keep Shabbos
on
the table?
That right there is the Kasha. How can you keep Shabbos in the Teva? There is seven Sfas Emeses that talk about that issue of Noach and Shabbos. It's not a coincidence, we'll call it, that the word Menucha, Shabbos Menucha, is from the word Noach. It's not like Yonah Matza Bo Manoach. B'shom Yanuchu Yigiei Koach is sung on Shabbos. You're like, oh, the Yonah, hey. It's not just Stam. It's not just Stam that the Teva, they exited the Teva on Shabbos, according to the Medrash. These are all like Midrashim that are connected to one another. Why Noach's name is there, why they exited on Shabbos, why we sing the song on Shabbos.
You can't beat the boat, yeah. You can't beat the boat on Shabbos.
Oh. Unbelievable understanding of the Mishnah, guys. Unbelievable understanding. We have to look at the Gemara. In the Gemara, if you've already landed before Shabbos, then you're allowed to go off the boat on Shabbos itself. They definitely landed before Shabbos. They were already on Har Ararat. The question wasn't if there was land on Har Ararat. The question was there land under the mountain where all the land was, the valleys and stuff like that.
On a cruise ship, you're allowed to get off and take a walk. And
should you be on a cruise ship?
What do you mean? You can be on a cruise ship, I thought.
Just asking.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know you were opposed. Fine. So now that we can be on cruise ships, right? Now that you're on the cruise ship, can you dock? If they dock on Friday night or Saturday, then it is a very big problem. The only way that it could be possible is if they're making, and it's likely, they're making the dock, whatever they're doing it for all the people, which includes non-Jews,
yeah.
Then a Jew might also be able to use it. That's a shaila in and of itself, but that's something that...
somewhere, and it's over Shabbos.
Yeah, in Echonami. That might be... Yeah, then usually you'll be able to, but I'd like you to ask a specific Shaila at that time. It depends on how they make it. It depends on what they do for it. But in normal situations, we'll go through. So again, we went through Rashi, we went through all those, we spoke about the Targum Yonah, said about the stone and the window, etc. We asked questions on it. We went through all of those toward the end. Okay, we'll stop with that, guys. Have a great...